The Local Thread.
Welcome to Toledo Works, a weekly show produced in partnership with the Toledo Free Press as part of WGTE's The Local Thread. I'm Jaden Jefferson, a politics and government reporter and podcast host for the Free Press. This week, we're checking in with staff from the Toledo Lucas County Public Library System. From connecting individuals to the internet or Northwest Ohio students to tutoring services, the library meets a diverse set of needs. At the same time, however, the library is facing a $1.6 million budget shortfall over the next 2 years. That's after last summer, State House Republicans made the switch from funding libraries through a set percentage to a line item appropriation, exposing the state's library systems to potentially more uncertainty in how much funding they receive. This new $1.6 million budget shortfall is in addition to an existing $2.8 million deficit, stemming from higher operational costs, according to the library. My first guest this hour is Kathy Bartel, the Toledo Lucas County Public Library's Director of Public Services. Kathy, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Obviously, that's a lot of the fiscal situation, but before we dive into that later in our conversation, I just want to start with your own experiences at the library. As I understand it, you've been there over 40 years. So in that time, what have been some of the biggest shifts you've seen?
So I have worked at the library for over 40 years. I started as a page. That's somebody who shelves books. I started with that, and then I went off to college. When I came back, I became a librarian, and then I left again and went to library school, and I came back as a children's librarian. During the time that I've worked at the library, I've been a page, a children's librarian, a branch manager, manager of circulation at the library, manager in our technical services department. So I've had a pretty broad range of experiences in all aspects of public service at the library.
And the thing about being in those different positions is you kind of get exposed to a different side of the library. So were there some things that you were unfamiliar with before those different positions?
When I became the circulation manager, I didn't really know how our catalog worked. That is something that I learned. I was here when we had the card catalog. That's how I started filing cards in the card catalog. And now everything is online in our online catalog, and I am involved in that work also. The library has changed over the years from a place that used to be pretty much just books. We've added videos, we've added CDs, we've added computers. Over the years, things have changed so much. And that has meant the things that our customers are looking for have changed, and also our spaces have needed to change.
And that really speaks to the fact that the library's mission or its objectives overall have shifted. Obviously, it's always kind of been a community center, but in many ways, its role has evolved. And so what would you say has been the way the library's role or presence in the community has been changed?
So the library, we like to think of ourselves as the third place. People have their home, they have their work, and then they have somewhere else that they go. And the library we think of as a third place. It's a place where people can come to learn about the things they want to learn about, to meet with their neighbors, to use our computers and our Wi-Fi and our internet. It's a place for children to come and have dinner. It's a place for children to come and learn things about reading, just to have fun. We have many community partners in our spaces. I think that is one of the big things that's changed is how many community partners use our spaces. We have mobile health units. We have lawyers who come and help people with different things. The Ohio Justice Bus is
right.
One of the things that comes and does that. I think if you want a local service, the library is a really good place to start.
And obviously, the library's really been able to grow its presence, not just through offering more services, but its actual physical presence. And it's also in a time of transition because there is a library branch that will unfortunately be closing for the neighborhood that it serves, but there's a larger project that's happening as a result of that. So kind of speak to what's unfolding currently.
Absolutely. several years ago, the library passed a bond issue to allow us to update our spaces. I mentioned that as people's needs change, it makes it so that we need to change our spaces to accommodate. Unfortunately, with the budget cuts and with our master plan, the Toledo Heights branch is one of the branch that we decided to close. Toledo Heights is in a neighborhood, not on a main street, that unfortunately has led to less use there. The people who do use it use all of our services. Their children come and spend the afternoons there. They read. We have programming. We serve food. We have meeting spaces. But that building is not on a main street. It's not in a place where people are driving by, which is one of the things we've noticed about how people find our spaces. They usually are on their way to somewhere else. The library is on the way. And then you stop. Toledo Heights, unfortunately, that's not true. It's also a very old building. It was built in the 30s. It is not handicapped accessible. And to bring it up to code, to make it handicapped accessible, would really cost a lot of money. And so that we can economize and do the best with the money that our citizens have voted to share with us, we made the decision to close Toledo Heights, and eventually Toledo Heights and Heather Downs will merge. One of the things that we found when we were looking at how to economize, we realized that many of the customers at Heather Downs actually live in the Toledo Heights area. It was a very large percentage that used both branches. Hmm. So it's not, and they went farther for that. The new branch that we plan to build is midway between Heather Downs and Toledo Heights, about a mile and a half between each one. So it's actually less travel for the Toledo Heights people once that building is built.
Yeah, and as I understand, that new branch is set to open in 2028. What would you say is the importance of making that investment in the first place?
The citizens of Lucas County have said, we value libraries, we want up-to-date spaces, that's what our master plan, that's what our bond issue was all about, and to develop spaces that offer our community what they need or what they say they want. They want more meeting rooms, they want quiet study, they want places for children. They want places to meet their neighbors. They want community spaces. And the buildings that we have now, Heather Downs and Toledo Heights being two of those, were built a while ago when people had different kinds of needs.
And as is true of companies, is true of government organizations, such as the library itself, where you have to come up with a long-term plan for how to spend money and how to allocate resources. And you can see kind of how the library's long-term plan has been reflected in just the last few years, where you see that the needs change, and so different services are offered to meet those needs. And so what has been the importance of adaptation for the library? Because it's obviously it has a robust presence in the community.
We are always listening to our customers and what they want from us, and we change the way we do things based on what they ask us. Most recently, after COVID, the library was getting more and more questions about community services. We're librarians. We're not social workers. We're not doctors, we're not nurses, but that's what our customers were asking us about. So we went out into the community and asked people to come and visit our spaces. That's one of the things that we really can offer at the library with all of our branches in all different neighborhoods. We offer to community organizations the ability to be in the areas they want to be.
And how big of a role has that played in just increasing foot traffic?
Oh, we have community organizations in our spaces every day, and people come. Mercy Nurses are there several, at least once a week in some locations. We have Shots for Tots. We have the Ohio Justice Bus with lawyers. We have many different organizations every day in nearly all of our spaces.
And there is something to be said about how those are often services that people may not be able to access at other locations. And so does the library kind of feel that responsibility to offer these different services?
Yeah, one of our strategic plan goals is to be a community hub. And so bringing in organizations to meet with the community is definitely one of our strategic goals.
So how would you say the library approaches finding different partners?
A lot of it has to do with what our customers ask us. They say we want health services, or we want some access to those kinds of things, and then we go out and find partners that can do that. But now, many community organizations have realized how the library can help them. Many come to us and we figure out how they can fit in our spaces, which of our spaces are best. More and more other organizations want to be in the library. We are a trusted organization that other organizations want to be associated with.
Yeah, and as I began at the top of the show, obviously the library is facing headwinds not just from Columbus, but just the overall economy. And so what were those initial discussions after looking at the fiscal situation for the next couple of years? How did you go about prioritizing different services?
So we looked at our strategic plan. Our strategic plan has five different goals. One is to help children learn to read, help children succeed, be a community hub, help people with technology, and make sure our staff are equipped to do all of those things. So we looked at our strategic goals. We looked at what our expenses were, what could we do without, because that's not really what happened, except in terms of hours and the hours that we were open. That it wasn't could we do without it, but it was where did we need to make cuts. We didn't really drop any services. We just are doing them in less hours.
Reorganizing.
Yeah.
So obviously we've talked a lot about just the present, but I guess looking at the future, what do you think the future holds for the library?
Wow. Well, for sure, books. That, you know, when you think about the library, I think most people think about books, and I think we are very much intending to continue to have collections in our spaces. The majority of our customers definitely come in to get materials at the library. But I think, again, that third space, that safe place where everybody feels comfortable at the library, that is for sure our goal. I think we will continue to offer community services as our customers ask for them. I know we'll continue to offer technology. We have some new technology. I mean, maybe it's not super new, but it's technology people don't have in their house.
Right.
And I think we'll continue to provide that. Right now, it's our maker spaces. We have 3D printing. We have some recording studios. We have some different equipment that people can try before they decide to purchase it themselves. And I think we'll continue to look for that new technology to share with our customers so then they can make their decisions about whether that's something they want personally.
Yeah, and one of the objectives in the long-term plan that I'd like to explore more is just reading, because you mentioned that that's one of the big goals of the library is to help youth in the community be exposed to more books and also to improve their literacy. So kind of speak to the ways in which the library is approaching that.
So we have very definitely adopted the science of reading at the library. And we work with our children's librarians to incorporate different facets of the science of reading in the programming they do, in the after-school engagement that they do. We also are beginning to offer tutoring to students. That's a very small pilot program right now, but it is based on the science of reading. We want to help children learn to read, so we're doing everything we can, including buying books that incorporate those kinds of ideas. And when you go into any of our libraries, there is a collection of books that help children get to that third grade reading guarantee that are based on the science of reading.
And I know at the state level, this is something that is purported to have been a big priority, which is improving literacy in Ohio through the science of reading. But for those unfamiliar, kind of explain the ideology of the science of reading.
So I'm not an expert on the science of reading, so I have just an overview, sort of. But basically, the science of reading, for many, many, many years, scientists, educators have been studying how children learn to read. And what they have discovered is that there are definite things that children need to learn in a certain order about the sounds of words, the way words are formed, that help them be able to figure out what words say. And it is scientifically discoverable. It's scientific, can be taught in a certain way. You learn one thing, then you learn the next thing, then you learn the next thing. And that's where we are working with teachers and parents to provide materials and to add that little extra at the library. So we're doing the same things that teachers and parents are doing.
And what's fascinating about that, as is true of any educational initiative, it's certainly something that it takes time to see those results pan out. We've certainly seen this in other states as well. I know Mississippi is a state where this has been initiated, and of course it took some years, but literacy also improved there. What would you say the library is doing in terms of fostering young relationships with the library? Because it seems that if students are spending a lot of time in their youth at the library, they may be more inclined to spend their adult years at the library.
Yep, absolutely. And we start engaging with children as young as 2 years old. We have baby times, we have toddler times, we have preschool. And then we move on to having programs for school-age children. One of our big initiatives is engagement with children. And so every day in all of our branches after school, librarians spend time engaging with the students in their spaces. So school-age children, middle school children, high school students, whoever is there, we spend time building those relationships so that people will want to come back. I mean, I'm somebody who used the library as a child. I was in the summer reading club. I can still remember that at the Maumee Library. That was my library when I was young. I joined Winter Read this year. I got to pick up my hat. But that's something that people will, we are always offering those kinds of things for people to join and be a part of at the library.
And there is something to be said about how youth today have so many options about how they can spend their time, many different ways in which they can pass the time. But the library is definitely combating what we see often with social media. And obviously there's a gravitation toward social media and technology when there can be those interpersonal relationships that are developed.
The library is one of those places that people can come. They don't have to buy anything. That is part of why we have our building plans, to make our spaces continually appealing and welcoming to our customers, to the citizens of Lucas County.
Yeah, and I don't want to paint with a broad brush with regard to technology, because there are ways in which the library is using technology to reach more people. Certainly the Libby app is one app that people have used, and there are plenty of other digital products that the library offers. So kind of speak to those and ways people can take advantage of them.
So we have technology in our spaces with our computers and our Wi-Fi, and actually our Wi-Fi is also outside our spaces. If you're driving by the library or you stop by, you can use our Wi-Fi outside the library too.
Yes.
So we have things in our spaces. We have Libby. You can read the Toledo Blade on the library's website, and also many other magazines. A lot of magazines aren't actually published in hard paper, in paper format anymore,
sure.
But you can read them, hundreds and hundreds of magazines through Libby or through Flipster is the other product that we have. And besides Libby, we also have Hoopla. Hoopla is another product with audiobooks, and they also have whole music albums, TV shows. You can watch a whole TV season of a TV show on Hoopla. You can watch it on your phone, but you can also watch it on your television because you can download their app to your TV. There's so much technology. We have virtual reality things at the library. Those, we don't loan them out, but we work a lot with teenagers especially and provide programming. We do gaming at the library. There are a number of gaming clubs at different branches where kids can come and play these games with their peers, with the librarian there to help them learn new things about their games.
See, you have a lot of technology. I think that's the short answer. You have a lot of
technology, absolutely.
Yeah, and could you have imagined 42 years ago when you began your career at the library that it would evolve into offering so many different things?
No, not at all. I mean, we had the card catalog. We did not have a computer. We checked out books by running things through a microfilm machine. It was a very different time, that's for sure.
And I can say one notable change in my time has been the fact that fines no longer exist. I remember there was a time when you had to pay a library fine, yeah. But those were gone years ago. So things are really changing.
Yes. No fines was one of the projects that I worked on when I was the circulation manager. And it has allowed so many more people to continue to use the library. We really just want our materials back. We don't want to punish people. We just want the books back.
So if you're holding onto that book from 3 years ago, it's probably a good idea to
bring
turn it in.
Back. Yes, absolutely.
So I also just want to end here because not only do people pay their taxes to support the library, they also can support the library through volunteering or through spending just time utilizing the services. So what are some of the different ways that people can uplift the library?
So definitely coming to our programs, being part of the conversations that we have, telling us what it is they're looking for at the library. Those are all things that help us. We do have a lot of volunteers also, as you mentioned, that help us. We have volunteers that help us at our programs. During the summer, we actively recruit teenagers to help us with summer read. There's, you know, so many people in our spaces. We need that extra help, and we want to give the children that come in some attention, and there's no better attention than getting it from somebody who's a little bit older than you. So we really appreciate that. We also have our friends of the library, and they do quite a lot for us. One of the big things they do is hold the book sales at our book sale center. Those happen a number of times over the years. If you look at our website, you can see all the different sessions. You can come and purchase gently used books, but also books that people donate to us, things that were in our collection that aren't on our shelves anymore. Volunteers help us quite a lot.
For sure. Well, Kathy, thanks again for coming on Toledo Works. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Kathy Bartel is the Director of Public Services for the Toledo Lucas County Public Library. I'm Jaden Jefferson, and Toledo Works continues after this, right here on FM 91. You're listening to Toledo Works from the Toledo Free Press and WGTE Public Media. I'm Jaden Jefferson. As we continue our episode on the Toledo Lucas County Public Library and the people who make it work, I'm joined by Zachary Huber, who is the Fact and Fiction Manager at the Main Library Branch. Zach, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Before we dive into your current position at the library, you initially worked with the Small Business and Nonprofit Division of the library. So kind of explain what that work entailed.
Yes, I worked in the Small Business and Nonprofit Department for 6 years. So that department is pretty unique. It actually stemmed out of a change the library made in 2019 when the main library was renovated. We took librarians who were traditionally on the desk and could do some very limited amounts of one-on-one help with customers and made that a completely independent department that no longer staffed a reference desk. So it was a really interesting mix of one-on-ones with customers doing research for their business plans, working with our partners in the community. But really, a lot of it was about meeting our customers where they needed to be met for their business or their nonprofit.
And that was something I discussed with our last guest, Kathy Bartel, who is the Director of Public Services for the library, that the library's role has really expanded. And one of the ways in which it has expanded, as you explained, is through helping nonprofits and businesses. And so what would you say has been the importance of that work?
Sure. I mean, the work kind of fundamentally has always been about connecting people to resources. In today's world, it is so hard to find what is reliable and what is true, especially on the internet.
Oh, for sure.
Right. So a big portion of that was taking something that is very scary, using our expertise and knowledge of the ecosystem and translating that into the words that people understand every day through a very trusted resource, which is the library. We were the ones who knew what website you should trust to form an LLC or a nonprofit and which ones were out there to scam you. You know, sometimes it was as simple as telling someone, hey, that letter you got in the mail, don't trust it. So we're really leveraging our trust with the community to help them get connected to those pieces.
And as I would imagine, for some people, if they didn't go through the library, they would be exposed to more vulnerabilities with regard to scams, as you just explained.
Yes. Even some things that I would say are trustworthy sometimes don't always pan out. For example, customers might use an online resource that we know to be trustworthy, we've all heard of, but maybe it didn't, maybe they miscommunicated along the way, and there would be some sort of situation that we would have to fix to get them out of. If they had talked to us to begin with, that probably could have been alleviated and avoided.
And certainly it also helps clear up some confusion because people, if you're starting a business, for example, there's a lot of work involved, maybe some startup costs or just some things that you're unaware of. The library can kind of help guide people through that so they're not kind of going at it blind.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite things to do with people is figure out what it is they really wanted to do.
Right.
And then figure out which pieces they actually needed to check off, which boxes applied to them. You know, if they were going for a nonprofit, you know, what were those tax-exempt pieces they needed to check off? Or were they forming, you know, a business they were operating out of their home? Did they actually need that certification? So it was always really fun to hear what they were working on and then translate that to what were those deliverables.
Are people often surprised at the fact that the library offers these services?
Oh, absolutely. It's not something that you naturally think of. And one of my favorite things to say is that's the beauty of an urban library system. We have that extra staff, capacity to make those specialized services. And I've worked at a smaller library system in Ohio, just not something that was possible in that location.
Yeah, and certainly the presence of this urban library system, it's a lot larger because people can interact with these services at plenty of different branches.
Exactly. I mean, the Small Business and Nonprofit Service, we tried to bring that to as many branches as we could, have those physical one-on-one sessions at different locations prior to opening what is now the workspace at Main Library. So that's kind of centralized it a little bit. But we've always, as a system, tried to spread things out in a way that made sense to reach the most people that would benefit from it.
And would you say that in your time at the library that you've seen the use of these services grow?
Absolutely. I mean, I am not fresh on the numbers, but I would see our numbers double from year to year in terms of customers served or our customers attending our programs. Somewhere in the 4,700 people served the last year, I believe. And then when I started, so I started in 2019, I want to say that number is more like 1,200. So just in 5 years, and of course, factoring in a pandemic happened during that time. So much growth has happened.
So given that you say there's this growth that has happened, has it been just through the library's own promotional efforts, or has it been through word of mouth, or even both?
Absolutely. We've been greatly supported by our communications team, but it's always, and this is not for just library services, this is any service, word of mouth is always the best review. And that was who we would see come through the door is, oh, so-and-so, my cousin, my friend, my neighbor, they worked with you and they said, I needed to talk to, in my case, Zach. But there are other team members, people would get that one-on-one referral and it meant so much more to them than anything anyone else could say.
And obviously in the time since, you've now found a new role at the library as the fact and fiction manager at the main branch. Kind of explain for people what your day-to-day looks like now.
Sure. So it is the fact and fiction position that is at main library, the bulk of like the adult services collection. You know, think of the phrase fact and fiction. So we've got our complete fiction collection. And on the other side, we have our nonfiction collection, but that's got all of our periodicals. But within that department, we even have some sub-interesting things going on. That's where we administer our home delivery service. So folks who can't come to the library can sign up for materials delivered to them every month. It's also where we house the Steinem Sisters collection, which is, as far as we know, the only public library that has a feminist collection.
Really?
And that started a number of years ago through a donation from a local bookstore, actually. The fact and fiction, it's really just what you'd think of as that massive piece of a main library.
And so how do you source different materials? You just mentioned that a donation was made for the Steinem Sisters collection. What are some different ways that the library finds new materials?
So we're always listening to our customers. Of course, we are also kind of keeping our pulse on what interesting and well-known authors are coming up. But we are always big fans of collecting works from local authors. So a lot of times we get those donated from local authors. Of course, a lot of our collection goes back to the 1800s. So that material hasn't gone. It's still in there. We have traditionally been a depository for the federal government. So some of that stuff's just been accumulating through that system as well. Of course, like I said, just listening to the suggestions our customers are looking for. You know, there are books on titles that I would have never thought of to suggest for purchase until someone's asked for it.
So what would you say has been the importance of listening to customers? Because certainly they know what they want, and so they're kind of able to provide that direct feedback in a way.
Yeah, we want to have the materials that people are looking for. Of course, we have to temper that with what does the most good with a limited budget, you know, what will other customers also want. So if we can get it and it makes sense for everyone, we're happy to acquire it. There's always going to be some no's. We do have to factor in, you know, is this something that only specific to you and your question, or can other customers benefit from this purchase decision?
Well, and certainly social media has played a role too in the way in which libraries operate, because you will see authors are promoting their work through social media. And as I've heard, book talk is a big thing. I'm not on TikTok, but I've heard that that's also a big sector. So
I am not on TikTok as well, but it is definitely impacted. I think so. Just 2 years ago, I believe we kicked off Romance Con at the library, which has been so well attended. It's about 2,000 people attending.
Wow.
That one day kind of celebration of romance authors and romance books. But I really, romance has always been around ever since you can think of those paperbacks people are reading in the 80s with Fabio on the cover. But the genre has really taken off, and I kind of attribute that to a little bit of book talk.
See, and that's kind of like a primary example of how you see what's happening in the outer sphere kind of taking place in the library, because
exactly.
People are more so engaging with their library, not only because you can check a book out for free, but you're kind of having this experience with other readers.
Exactly. And we service a number of book clubs. In fact, I'm one of the leads for the horror book club. So yet another genre over the recent years that has really taken off is the horror genre. People love to talk about what they're enjoying, whatever that media might be, if it's books, DVDs, audiobooks. I'm a big audiobook listener. I have a bit of a commute. So that's my area.
So would you say that that's been the big way in which the library has not only increased foot traffic, but also just increased the amount of people who are reading? Because it definitely plays a role when you're engaging with something rather than just reading it passively.
Yes, absolutely. That's actually, when we think of a library, sometimes we don't think of the retail component of connecting people to the things that they're looking for. So I a number of years ago, got my master's in library science. And even at that point, we were talking about hand selling, you know, finding that one thing that someone's looking for. I have so many people in my personal life where they weren't reading, they weren't readers. And I just kept saying, you know, you just got to find that one thing. You got to find that genre, got to find that book, and it's going to open it up for you. And it's so true. So it's listening and kind of knowing a Rolodex of things that might work for somebody. And it's all about preference.
And in many ways, it's that the library is a public square, too, because you're kind of seeing the ideas and the conversations taking place at the library.
Yeah, it's funny you say that sometimes. So I will be working at the reference desk and someone will be talking through something. And let me add the caveat. I'm not a fan of eavesdropping, but there'll be people who are both at the desk and I'll hear someone jump in and say, you know, oh, you should read this. Or did you know the library was doing this before I could ever even get on it? So people love to connect.
And certainly there's also this early literacy component as well, because we're seeing in Ohio that there really is a push to not only help young readers read, but make them lifelong readers. And so would you say that the library has a big role in that? And if so, how?
We do. So we are trying to stay on top of all the developments on, and what's current right now is the science of reading.
Right.
And so all across our entire system, every librarian has been trained on the science of reading, whether you work in adult services or youth services. That way we can understand what's being taught in the schools, how we can understand and better serve parents. And then we are also huge advocates for just getting people to read literally anything. And that's evident through our winter read and our summer read programs, which just keep setting records, to be honest.
Wow. So what do you make of that engagement? Why is it that this program is setting records?
I think people love to be a part of something. You know, and there's a little bit of a nostalgia in there, especially in my generation. We think of the reading clubs where people would be rewarded with free pizza after reading so many things. We've all loved programs like that over decades. I mean, I can't remember the exact year we started our summer read, but we have materials from decades ago marketing that. And I think there's this huge kind of motivation to just say, hey, whether it's like a community read or the kind of program we're talking about now, people just want to participate because yet again, it's just like, hey, are you doing the winter read? Did you get your free hat? People just love that.
And I think what comes to mind for me is just meeting people where they're at, because like you said, you just want people reading anything.
Mm-hmm. The current program, winter read, it's just a number of books. We want you to read two books by the end of the program. Summer read is the same way. We want you to read a certain amount within that cycle period. You choose. We don't care.
What would you say people get out of participating in the different programs? I know you mentioned community was a big part of that, because there is an isolating nature to maybe social media or just doing things on your own. But what are some of the other things that people derive from that?
Yeah, I think we're always looking for our tribe. But we also want to we're always kind of looking for that validation that what we're doing, everyone else is doing. We all have our genres. And to hear someone say it truly isn't matter what you're consuming, but the fact that you're doing it is correct. I think that that's a surprise I see from people every day. It's just we want you to participate. I mean, that's really the foundation of democracy, honestly, is it's this civic participation, and that happens at all levels.
For sure. And certainly you mentioned that you lead a book club for the library, and it's about the horror genre. Mm-hmm. And in many ways, that's keeping people coming back.
Yeah, I mean, you get, even on that level, a small community. And I think we see that with the other book clubs. I've subbed in a couple other ones. We have the coffee shop book club. And all of these meet every month, generally. And you see the same people come back. And I mentioned, you know, privacy with people. Those walls kind of come down. You start to see the same faces. You know, they're part of your social network, even if, you know, you never see them outside of that Zoom session or that coffee shop meeting for your book club.
And I think the reason those walls come down is because people, I guess, they're more open to being vulnerable, you know, and you definitely get that out of a book club discussion. I've been a part of a few.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, reading is empathy.
Sure.
And so having that shared empathy can open new doors for conversations that have absolutely nothing to do with the book.
So kind of take me through that book club meeting. Of course, you don't have to give away all the details. What happens in the book club meeting stays in the book club meeting. But kind of explain for folks what that typical experience is like.
Yeah. So as a book club leader, your goal is to get people talking, whether that's answering your questions or not. That does not matter. Sometimes people will have tangents that are coming in from their lives or they're bringing in those stories. Sometimes it's a little harder where maybe we didn't actually... maybe we didn't love the book, but I've learned that when people don't love the book, they want to talk more about it.
Exactly.
But sometimes we're just prompting them on you know, the easy literacy component of it. Like, whoa, tell me about the setting. Did you like the main character? All of that. But all that's really just to launch the discussion. It's that once people kind of gel after a few minutes and they're feeling a little bit more warm about the group, do we really get to that good discussion?
You know, this reminds me, I was reading Everything I Never Told You by Celeste Ng, and I tell you, the best conversations I had with my friends about that book were about how much we couldn't stand James's behavior. And I think that that's an important note, and that's the beauty of reading, because to some extent I can empathize with him, but at the same time I could despise him as a person.
Exactly. You don't have to love everything to really enjoy a book, especially I think that's where the conversation comes in. You know, if you read a book alone and you hated it, then you just kind of move on. But if you read a book alone and you hated it and there's someone else to egg you on, you're like, okay, I still got something out of this.
Because it feels like time wasted when it's on your own, right?
Right, right. So a good company can change anything.
So kind of speak to how the library approaches, you know, building those bridges and connecting with the community, because obviously book club is one way. What are some of the different other ways the library is engaging?
Sure. We are always engaging in civic discussion. So, you know, every time that there's an election on the ballot, we're just trying to get people to sign up to register to vote. One thing that I always loved is some of the more lecture-like programs that we have going on at Main Library. In the past, that's been through our Better Toledo program, which is a personal and professional development. We're looking at some other lecture series to really engage people with. And that's really, I really see the value of the library is, you know, that lifelong learning. What are you going to be able to get that's a little bit more curated from people you trust? Whereas, of course, there's a lot on YouTube. You can Google anything, but sometimes that's overwhelming. But and then how do you know that who you're watching is trustworthy as a resource?
And I really like the point you made earlier where libraries can really be that central piece of democracy, because that's where conversations are happening and where people are going to be able to disagree, find something they agree with, find a perspective that they never thought someone could have. And So what would you say is the importance of the library in this particular moment?
Well, I, as a librarian, sometimes get a little nervous when programs might pop up that could be controversial, because you always hope that people are civil towards each other. And that's usually almost always overwhelmingly the case. Our job is to get them in the room and to find those topics of discussion that people want to talk about. Because, you know, every year is different. The topics need to change. And we have to stay on top of that. So I love when people get into a room and they get to the point of the program where they're sharing their own experiences, and people get to hear about some other real human and what's affecting them.
And that's how you fight polarization.
Exactly. And also, this isn't just library programs. Our rooms are across the system are open to community groups to organize their own events. And that is not something that we, try to prejudge who's using the rooms. So they're able to carry on their own conversations themselves just by using those facilities.
And I see that often the library is hosting different authors' events, and those are ways in which people are still being exposed to those ideas. And so what do you make of just the attendance and the interest in these events?
Yeah. There's so many different kinds of programs happen across the system every day that I think there's always something that someone's interested in. A lot of those authors' events, or there's Live at the Library, which is a concert series at Main Library. I see those people attend, and I also am that person who just wants to go to a free thing that I don't even maybe know what it is, but it's another way to engage with your community. I'm sure maybe some of the artists that we might be having at Live at the Library not everyone's heard of. But, you know, it's free music. You get to see some people, those people who live nearby that maybe you haven't met yet, that gives you just the opportunity to experience your community in a new way.
Well, and that free component is a big part of it, because accessibility doesn't exist everywhere. And the library is one of those rare places where things are accessible. There isn't a barrier that's keeping people from them. And so would you say that's what sets the library apart, is that there isn't that barrier?
Yeah, we actually over the years have reduced there's so many barriers to using the library in such a positive way. I mean, I think about my childhood and getting a library card, and I think there's a lot of apprehension of like, well, I don't have my license, or I don't have this ID. We will take pretty much anything that shows that you live or work in Ohio, not even Lucas County, so that we can get you a library card. And a lot of times, to use pretty much anything, that's all that you need. There are some specialty services, like we help people get passports, a little bit more with that, and there's some fees with that too. But to come into the library, to hop on a computer, to check out a book, we just need to know that you're here and you want to do it.
What would you say have been the benefits of just getting rid of that culture of gatekeeping that maybe has been pervasive in library systems across the country?
I think that has allowed so many more people to find ways to use resources that maybe they thought were not for them. That is really the beauty of a library, is we do not care. In fact, the less you tell us about yourself, the better. We care about privacy so much. The less you tell us, the better. We just want to be able to know what you need and how you want that format delivered to you. We just are fully aware that all of these resources are paid by our community, and so everyone should have access to them.
Right. And it's interesting because you were just telling the story about, you know, when you were little, how you spent time at the library. I can recall crossing a busy street to pick up a book I had on hold. I mean, you have so many people that have those memories of the library system. So what are some of your early memories at the library?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I was the kid who would go to story time as well. But when I was probably in middle school is really when a lot of like online gaming was starting to come on. And so I don't know who else remembers the game RuneScape. I think it's still a live game. They probably updated it over the years, but like all the kids in middle school would go play RuneScape on the library computers in my hometown. I would also, when I was really little, always go straight to the I Spy books. Loved checking out the I Spy books. Wasn't very good at them.
See, and that's the thing too, because there are those different series, because if you have children who are able to have that intrigue and that interest, I think that curiosity stays with them long term. And so do you see that currently in a lot of kids kind of having that curiosity that they're able to nurture at the library?
For sure. We focus a lot on engagement in our building. So there will be youth there who are just filling their time. Actually, we're glad they're in our building because that means they're not doing some other thing. So we want to engage them. We want there to be activities for them to do the moment that they're in the building, whether they're welcome to hop on our computers, but we might be more likely to engage them in a one-on-one activity that, you know, one that's coming to mind is at the Kent branch. I know on the table next to the library in there is a book full of origami. And so sometimes it's just, hey, welcome in. Do you want to learn how to do some origami?
See, and that's the thing. It's not just for youth. It's also for adults, because adults, they kind of lose that whimsy in the day-to-day of life, which is easy to do because it kind of is like work sucks all the life out of you. But at the same time, though, the good thing is there is still that curiosity that some people are able to maintain.
For sure.
So would you say many adults have nurtured it at the library?
Yes. I mean, I see every day someone who's just checked out a laptop at Main Library and they're ready to find something else. It might be a learning thing. It could be learning a new recipe. It could be getting a new job. It could be getting their first job. There's plenty to do, and it's not always around books. And we try to find ways to keep people focused on improving their lives. Because again, boil down the library, it's about connecting people to resources.
Certainly. And how do you see that mission playing out in the future? Because I mentioned in our last interview, the library is constantly evolving. And so what do you think the next thing will be? I know in some cases you can't even predict it.
Oh gosh, I know. I mean, if you had told me that I was going to work in the small business and nonprofit department, I was like, that doesn't exist. So I think we'll continuously find ways to bring in our community partners. I don't know if this is something that we're looking at locally, but I mean, just kind of as a parallel, the Los Angeles County Public Library, or it might just be the Los Angeles Public Library, they have a really unique area where they have permanent social services in their building so that people can kind of come in. But one of those social services I found interesting was GED. So through their library, they're able to get, you know, their diploma equivalency. So I think the future is always going to be more integration rather than the library starts a new service. It's more about let's pull together the resources that we're already able to access.
So would you say that it's common that the Toledo-Lucas County Public Library often pulls inspiration from other library systems?
Absolutely. You know, we try to be innovative on our own end because, you know, every community is a little bit different. But the field of librarianship is very much that, a field. So a lot of folks are active in going to conferences, but, you know, there's publications to read, magazines on librarianship that we get to hear from our other colleagues across the country. And many of those items will resonate with us, and we'll find ways to maybe not do the exact same thing, but our own version of it for the what we would like to serve our community.
So you're saying not only are people at the library learning, the people who work at the library are also learning.
Always. We also are lifelong learners.
You gotta love that. See, I think we could use more of those. That's a good thing. Well, Zachary Huber, you are the Fact and Fiction Manager at the Maine Library Branch. Thanks for coming in on Toledo Works. It's been
Thank
a
you.
Pleasure. And that is all for this edition of Toledo Works, which is a part of WGTE's The Local Thread and produced in partnership with the Toledo Free Press. You can find the show online at wgte.org/ToledoWorks, where new episodes are posted Friday morning before they air in the evening here on FM 91 at 7 p.m. I'm Jaden Jefferson. Have a great weekend.
The Local Thread is a production of WGTE Public Media. Episodes can be heard weeknights at 7 on FM 91 or anytime at WGTE.org.